This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, third hour, Tiki and Tierney. What's happening? We're coming from our Rocket Mortgage studio. I'm going to talk some baseball Jackie Robinson Day. That's coming up next here. Looking forward to it. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. So, you know, even the most basic things, baseball seems to stumble over. I do think they do a good job of honoring Jackie. But I don't know, and I know that the teams who aren't playing today will participate tomorrow, obviously. But how you don't have one uniform day where you iron out the logistics before the season starts, you know when Jackie Robinson Day is, work the schedule around it. Today, the Yankees aren't playing, the Angels aren't playing, the Cardinals aren't playing, the Cubs aren't playing, the Astros. But honestly, at this rate, I'm surprised that the Dodgers are actually playing, which thankfully they are.
I was getting ready to ask. Are these the Dodgers even playing?
They are.
Better be. You know, this day is, it's obviously a great day for baseball, but also for the country because of what he meant to black men and I guess and women too. If you can be included in a sport as white as baseball had become, because it wasn't always that way, as we all know, then anyone can achieve or be a part of the society that was predominantly white and the Jim Crow laws and everything else that was going on. I was just reading about it today. I don't think I ever realized this, BT, but it was Ken Griffey Jr. who was responsible for number 42 being worn from everybody, because on the 50th anniversary, which was April 15th, 1997, he asked the Mariners to flip his number. I don't know if he asked the commissioner at the time, Bud Selig, if he could do it. But
I think you'd have to run that through the office.
Probably.
Yeah, they can't just flip the number.
He flipped his number from 24 to 42, but he didn't do it again for 10 years. So maybe he did it and got chastised for it. Seriously.
And then next time he did it, he didn't
care. So 10 years later, it says on the 60th anniversary, he then asked Selig if he could do it again for the special occasion. Yeah. Selig obviously asked Rachel Robinson, Jackie's wife, and she said it was okay. And then he extended that to anybody who wanted it to be done. And then so that year, all the African-American players, or at least a lot of African-American players, wore 42 on the 60th anniversary. And then it was extended a few years later so that everybody wore 42 and ultimately was retired in 97. And then only people who currently had it, including Mario Rivera, were the only ones that could still wear it until their careers or their tenure was over.
Yep, great history lesson there. I'm not sure if everybody knew that. Yeah, you had to be grandfathered in. Mariana, one of the last for sure. You know, listen, the obvious, it's Jackie Robinson Day, and the impact, I can't imagine. I can't imagine, although, I mean, I try to, but I can't imagine if I am a black baseball fan in 1947. And trust me, here we are in 2021, and not everything's right, obviously. But in 1947, when you find out that you finally have representation, well, in the modern era, because as I chronicled a few times on the show, there were black players before the 1900s. And then, so, you know, we actually had that conversation somewhat recently where, and then, you know, there was a movement. Owners said, you know what, kind of collusion. We're not going to sign anymore. We're going to kind of keep him out of the game. And then they were out of the game. But there were, I'm not sure everybody, I don't want to take it for granted that everybody knows that, but there were absolutely black players before Jackie Robinson in the pre-modern era. But the enthusiasm, the pride, everything that is attributable to black people having representation on the field, there's a figure who I think gets overlooked, and it's just a small part because he's not Jackie Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
That's Pee Wee Reese. Pee Wee Reese was the former shortstop for the Brooklyn Dodgers. All right. Now, Brooklyn is a melting pot. My mom's born here. My dad's born here. But my maternal grandparents, Italy. My paternal grandparents, Ireland, a little Germany as well. And, you know, listen, you look at the tenements back in around the Depression, the Jewish people, the German immigrants, the Irish immigrants, the Italian. Like, New York has always been the biggest melting pot in the city, right?
Yep.
So if there's ever a spot, especially Brooklyn, ever a spot for this to happen under that backdrop, it certainly was New York, and I think Brooklyn was the perfect spot. But even with that being said, there was, as you can imagine, staunch reluctance to embrace Jackie Robinson. Pee Wee Reese put his arm around them, put his arm around. Now, that seems like no big deal now. But if Pee Wee Reese, now Jackie still would have played, he still would have broken the color barrier. But Pee Wee Reese, without saying a word, a symbolic gesture, basically just took a mega horn, like a mega piece, and shouted into the stands, "He's one of us, and I'm doing this because you need to see me do this." And Jackie's the one who deserves all the credit, yeah, obviously. But he had a little help along the way, and if he didn't, this thing may have gone into the 60s.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And it took acceptance from a lot of the white players at the time to make it happen. And one of those was Ralph Branca.
Yes, who actually, my buddy Ralph.
Yeah, I did an event with him, a Thuzio event, with him and his son-in-law, Bobby Valentine. Mm. I forget when this was. This is probably right when we started Thuzio. So I want to say 2008 or so. And we were actually talking about, just Jackie Robinson Day and what it means and why it was so important to baseball at the world. And Bobby brought up something that was interesting. By the way, the relationship, for those who don't know it, is that Ralph Branca lined up on the field next to Robinson while other players refused back in 1947, in opening day. And it was kind of, it was symbolic in a lot of different ways. But to fast forward to the story I was telling, I asked Ralph about this, and he was old at the time. And Bobby V kind of chimed in. He's like, as great as it was for Major League Baseball and for blacks in Major League Baseball, in a lot of ways, it was the beginning of the end for the Negro Leagues.
Yes.
Because all of 100%. A sudden, all of these great black players started to come to Major League Baseball. And he positioned this. I never thought about it until he brought this up, till Bobby Valentine brought this up, is that at that moment, it disconnected African-Americans, blacks, from baseball because they couldn't afford or often weren't allowed to go to Major League Baseball games. So yep. They got their baseball from watching Negro League games. Now, all of a sudden, the Negro Leagues are like falling apart a little bit because the great players want to play in Major League Baseball. So it's this mixed emotion for the black community about Jackie Robinson. Not that they didn't laud it and love it, but it kind of took baseball away from him in a lot of ways.
It's a great point. And obviously, Jackie was a bridge to other changes. You look back at the demographics of the game, and, now we watch, whether it was Ichiro Suzuki do his thing for all. Mm-hmm. And if Ichiro doesn't, he came here, he was 27 years of age. I've always said, if Ichiro comes over here at a conventional age, like 21, 22, he is blown by Ty Cobb, and he's blown by Pete Rose. He's the all-time hits leader. I've said that forever.
Yeah, it's not even close. Not even close. Dude.
That's going to get me to change my mind.
What's the number on him, like, actually? Like, if you count the 6 years?
I think it might be about 5,000.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Japanese exploits and stateside. But
I remember it was, like, absurd, the number. I was like, wow.
Oh, God, he was so good. I know you saw him at the end, and I know you were busy doing your thing as a football player. I get it. But, man, when he was young, he had a rocket from the – he was great. But the point being, I don't want to get sidetracked from Jackie. The point is you know, without Jackie as a bridge to obviously other black players, you look from 1947 when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. And by the way, Larry Doby, the first American leaguer, first black American leaguer for the Indians as well. We can't forget about Larry Doby and the Indians' importance in this too. And the Red Sox, I believe, were the last team to sign an African-American baseball player. But in 1947, 0.0 demographic Asian population in the game. Wow. Zero, yeah. Right? From 1947 to 63, there wasn't a single Asian in the game. Not a single Asian.
Wow.
And
it's not like they weren't playing the game.
Oh, they loved it.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
That's my point.
For sure. 98.3% of Major League Baseball in 1947 was white. The number now, as I scroll down, it's got to be in the, I'm going to say the 50s. Hang on. Maybe high 50. I'm sorry. 63.7%. Just American white, right? 63.7%. In 1947, basically 99%. Now the game is 64% white. The diversity in the game is incredible. And without Jackie, eventually it would have happened, obviously.
Yeah.
But without Jackie, you know, he is a bridge to everything.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, you're right. That's why this day is so important in Major League Baseball. By the way, Pete Rose has 4,256 hits. Ichiro had 4,367 if you include his nine
seasons.
A little
more than that. Okay.
Yeah,
but he still had it. Okay,
yeah,
he still had Pete.
Yeah, he
had about 100 or so.
He had 1,278 and nine Japanese seasons.
Got it.
The Nippon League, right?
Yeah.
And then 4,367, which is about 109 more, 10 more, 11, 111 more than Pete Rose.
I can still remember watching Pete Rose when he broke the mark. He was pitched. They were playing against the Padres. The Padres were, where is it? It was in Cincinnati, obviously. The Padres were wearing the gray uniforms with the, I believe they were brownish gold pinstripes. It was a left center field somewhat blue base hit. The pitcher was Eric Schau, and I believe, Santer, check this out. I believe the left fielder, almost positive, it was Carmelo Martinez. Look, I'm just curious. So then you look at, now this is the greater discussion. All right, so we get to, it's one thing to have change, it's one thing to break the color barrier, but where are we now with African Americans in the game? And the most recent study I have on baseball demographics, this ends at 2016, and it has skewed more favorably in the last couple of years. But Jackie's is 0.9% in 47. And, you know, when we were growing up, I'm looking at this now. I mean, you had in 75, it was almost 19%. It's when guys like Dave Winfield started to burst on the scene. Jim Rice, obviously, et cetera. I mean, a million other names I'm leaving out. Willie Starr, joined, keep good, Dave Parker, all over the map. It got up to 19% again in 1981. And let's see where the real drop. And then slowly, you know, then you start getting into the 2000s. And by the mid-2010s, you're at, by the mid 20s, at one point, you're at less than 7% a couple of years ago.
Wow.
Less than 7%.
Yeah, it ticked up, I mean, minimally, BT, to the start of, I'm reading an article from 2020, to 7.8%, about 80 players, and this is the 30-man rosters, last year. So it ticked up, but not nearly to the, it's, I mean, it's precipitously low relative to the 19% that you were talking about, you know, back then.
Yeah, I guess where I struggle, and again, my youth was, you know, I mean, but then again, just, and I know you're this way too, but you just, I mean, I had more posters in my room of black guys than I did of white guys.
Yeah.
You know, Ewing.
Talking about baseball and basketball.
Everything.
And everything, yeah.
Bernard King, Ewing, Wesley Walker, even though Jordan killed me as a bull, you know, he was Jordan. He had a couple, everybody had Jordan posters. You know, and I had a couple, you know, I had Don Mattingly, he's my all-time favorite, a couple of my guy Mully, but Mark Jackson, more black posters than white guys. And so I never looked at it through that. I just didn't. I was exposed to it early. But I know not everybody had a diverse upbringing like I did in New York City. That's not to say I'm better. That's not, please, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm trying to say is that I never really thought that there was a problem as the numbers eroded, because I never really looked at it through a racial prism. I just saw baseball players. Believe me or don't. I don't know what to tell you, but that's from my heart. And when I address this now, like, yes, the numbers are lower than they were. I mean, almost 20% in the 70s, and that is a 13% drop, and that's problematic. But my take has always been, I would love more black players in the game, but as long as young black kids are playing something,
yeah,
isn't that what really matters?
Yeah, I know. I think it is. And they gravitate, obviously, to the other sports. Because look at the percentage of blacks in the NFL. I mean, what is it, 72 or 3% now? I mean,
that's got to be. NBA's 82, 83%.
That's exactly right. And, you know, baseball, it makes you think about, like, what makes you fall in love with a sport? Is it watching someone who looks like you? Is it being exposed to it early in your life? That means obviously playing. I mean, everybody plays all these sports, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it's also like going to the games and seeing a major league game up close and or minor league game, whatever it may be. Like, what makes you fall in love with the sport? And, you know, it's no different than golf, this conversation we have about golf. Black kids, they don't see it. They don't play it. They don't go to the events because it's an affluent sport, as we talk about. I don't think baseball has that excuse per se, but I think it's just the nature of the game. It's like very cerebral, and you know these kids, these black athletes that are really good athletes, they want to be like moving and jumping and running and exploiting their athleticism. It's why I never fell in love with baseball, because I just felt like I wasn't doing a lot all
yep.
the time, you know.
Yep.
But if I played, you know, playing football, I mean, I was all over the place. Right. If I was playing, you know, even soccer or running track, I was all over the place. Whereas baseball, just I got, I don't know. I felt like I wasn't using my athleticism enough.
That I get sense. It. No, listen, Teak, there's been so many people who have weighed in, and, you know, and again, it was different in the 70s and 80s. But now there's not very many black pitchers. There's not very many black catchers. And, yeah. the thought is, well, you know, if you're a young kid, and I know this is a stereotype, but it's a lot of people latch onto this, like, you know, the athleticism, I don't know. I mean, I was a horrendous athlete. I was a good baseball player, mm-hmm. but I was a non-athlete, all right? But also, I was a non-athlete compared to my white friends, so yeah. like, who could run, and guys who could jump. So maybe I'm the wrong person to ask, but usually when kids start out playing, a lot of times, maybe based on that stereotype, the coach doesn't put the black kid on the mound because you want to put him in center field because you think he could run.
Yeah, or shortstop.
You're not going to put you're going to put him at shortstop. You're not going to put him at first base or behind the dish where there's minimal explosive movements. I that's one thing. The other thing is that I've heard educators talk about this, you know, opine, theorize, people, you know, like literally college professors that have done studies on this, that it's unappealing the path to get to the majors. I mean, you know, A ball, double A, triple A, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You get drafted in the NBA, you're an automatic millionaire. Boom.
Yep.
Automatic.
Yep. NFL.
Same with football if it's early enough.
Early enough. Or, I mean, even if you go to college, at least you're getting an education, you know, in the NFL. I mean, you got to be 3 years removed from high school in football, as we all know. And so what are you doing for those 3 years? Go get an education, you know, mm-hmm. and if you don't make it, at least you got an education,
yeah.
which is a lot more than, you know, some families, especially with some lower socioeconomic situations can say. So you do what's best for you immediately in the case of the NBA, because you can just bounce right away, or what's best for your family in the long run, which is go to college. Baseball is a different grind, man. Yeah, you can get a scholarship, but if you want to make it, like really make it and make big money, it's a long time. It's not like 2 or 3 years. It's sometimes 4 or 5 or 6 or 7.
Well, that's why when everybody was saying, oh, Kyler Murray, what are you doing? And then finally some people weighed in and said, no, this is a very lazy take. The quickest route to more money is mm-hmm. football.
Yes.
Because right. they see that, you know, they
especially if you have an inclination that you're going to be number one overall.
No doubt.
I mean, forget it.
Well, think about this. Everybody kind of reaches for the Giancarlo Stanton contract from years ago, or more recently, 13 years for Bryce Harper at $330 million, or, you know, Arenado's got a big deal and all that, you know. But, okay, that's great. But, you know, Aaron Judge is making, you know, $9 or $10 million this year, and he's 27 or 28 years of age. In the first couple of years, when he hit 50-plus bombs, he was making $450,000.
Yeah.
Kyler Murray makes that in a quarter or a series.
That's right.
In a year or two. So, I mean, that's one thing. I really, listen, at the end of the day, it's about, you know, sports shapes your competitive juices, clearly. But you learn how to win. You learn how to lose. You learn how to lean on people. You learn how to be on time. You learn how to handle adversity, your interpersonal skills develop. So whether it's a baseball diamond, a soccer pitch, a rugby field, the ice, a basketball court, whether it's a beautiful gym or somewhere in the inner city like the park that I grew up playing on, like it doesn't really matter as long as you're playing something. I really believe that. I don't know what else baseball can do. They get knocked around about a lot of things, and most times I lead that. But between RBI, which is a great inner-city program, which I did something with them years ago, there has been a real initiative for awareness and implementation. I don't know. I do think it's unfair on occasion when it's levied against baseball and their efforts are overlooked. I don't know what else they can do, quite frankly.
Yeah, no.
I really don't, Teak.
There's not much. I honestly don't think that there's anything that will change the narrative until it becomes easier to make it. And baseball, just by its nature, is not easy to make.
It's not. It's not easy
Never
to make
will
it.
Be. Never will be.
No, that's true. All right. Let's keep going with this a little bit. Branch out, compare it to some other sports. And maybe really, again, certainly believe that baseball has been one of the few things they've been very good at is this, trying to introduce it to every sector of the world, for sure, in every race and, you know, every demographic, economically, et cetera. But maybe there is something. I mean, maybe if we put our brains together, there's something we're missing that they can do that would lead to a spike in more participation at the youth level and then obviously translate to the bigs. We'll get to that a little bit more. If you want to get us on the phones, 855-212-4227. We'd love to hear what you think, where you live, different experiences, how old you are, different experiences with baseball. If you're a minority or a white player or a white listener, 1-855-212-4227. Keep rolling with this in a bit. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. So, you know, we were having a conversation. Jackie Robinson, first black player in the modern era, one of the true sporting icons, pioneers, obviously. And it's just, you know, it's amazing how the game still struggles to not include the African-American player, but, you know, have the a real discernible presence. Now, certain things you can control, certain things you can't control, right? And, you know, it's funny, and I'm going to bring this to my son, who obviously is white, like me. I didn't know that I would do this before I had children. And a couple times early, I caught myself, like, kind of falling back on my old school beliefs, right? And I said, no way. Like, if you want this kid to love baseball, then you got to do. And the example is this. So we'll go in the yard all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Pitch him. You know this, Teague. You know he could play a little bit. I'll pitch him. And I started with the tennis ball so we could wrap him over the fence before he could hit the baseballs over the fence in the yard, because obviously tennis ball with a metal bat's going further than a baseball at that age, right? And, I pumped the music through the speakers, the outdoor speakers, and we'd have a lot of fun. Every once in a while, Daddy blasted you like Eminem comes on NWA. I'm like, oh, I got to lower that. Neighbor's going to, I don't want my son there. You know, I got to put some different music. All right, time for Billy Joel. And, you know, because he watches baseball all the time, and I mean all the time, you know, he sees what the players do. Now he's starting to spit a little bit, which I'm trying to curtail, even though I get it. I used to do it. Now he's starting to grab his junk every once in a while. I don't know, like adjusted his, not even wearing a cup. But it's amazing what he's doing. And when he hits one over the fence, almost every time, he kind of throws the bat up in the air a little bit, and he watches it, right? And then he gets into his jog, and he's kind of like pointing at the sky like he's beating his chest. As he's running around the bases, he just turned six, right? And he was doing this when he was five. And the first few times, I'm like, nah, this is ridiculous. Like, I want to subscribe to the Barry Sanders believe, act like you've been there.
Yeah.
But he hasn't been there because he's just learning the game.
Yeah. So he's watching, he's emulating like the stars that he sees in baseball or the highlights that he watches on whatever, wherever he's watching highlights. I know what you mean.
You know, and he's good enough to replicate them, at least at this age, and more importantly, passionate enough to even try. And I'm saying to myself, you know what? Now, that is nonsense. That is an old view that you must adjust and evolve from. And I say that about my son because it's changed my views on bat flips and showmanship and showing off. Even the pitcher staring somebody down, barking when he whiffs somebody. I have no problem with that. Baseball cannot literally knock on somebody's door, deliver a bat. Well, I guess they could do that. And force somebody to play, independent of color. That you can't do. But what you can do is promote the players and promote the you know, the vibe that is now finally being promoted more freely that might appeal to everybody more.
Well, I've always thought that about baseball, BT. Like, even forget the race issue here for a second, but even the stars of the game, they're not, you don't see them, right? You don't see them in mainstream national commercials. You don't see them on social media. And maybe it's just the nature of the game. And I forget who we had on. Maybe it was a year or so ago. We asked him about this. And he basically said baseball players just don't have the time, right? Because it's an everyday grind. And when you have that off day, the last thing you want to do is, what's my social media presence look like? Did I post something to grow my brand? It's like, dude, I got to worry about, you know, who the next guy I'm going to face on the hill is, and, you know, how do I keep this team going in the right direction? Baseball players just aren't national brands like some of these other, like basketball and NFL players have become. And so I think that hurts as well in a little bit, because you just don't know them until you get to the end of the season.
Yeah.
And they've had a great year. Like right now, at the beginning of April, like you're not seeing the young superstars unless someone does something amazing. But you're not talking about them on a daily basis like you do in the NFL.
No, and that's not the point of this conversation. This is not to, you know, suddenly Tiki and Tierney's going to change the template for the show and we're going to start leading with baseball. No, of course not. That will never happen. Football's king. NBA's a close second. Big golf events, obviously, we always devote a lot of time to that. And, you know, usually with controversies with baseball, unfortunately, because it's more of a regional sport, that's where we weave it into our national rundown here. But, and by the way, you mentioned players. Let me just give you these numbers quickly. This is what Ronald Acuña is doing so far, okay? He's played 12 games. He's been up 54 times, 54 official plate appearances. He's got 21 hits, 6 doubles, 6 home runs, 12 ribbies, 3 steals. He's hitting .447.
Wow.
And his OPS is 1,500.
Right, and we saw him 2 days ago beat out a routine infield grounder against the Phillies.
Yes, the shortstop, that's correct. So the other thing, you know, I know Tatis is hurt now, but boy, just like whether it's the hair, whether it's the bat flip, whether it's the wristbands, whether it's the overall style, the presence, like, and I'm not trying to just associate that to the minority player, trust me. That is appealing to kids like my son. That's why I brought that example in.
No,
there.
Of course it is. I mean, this is why. What's the World Baseball Classic, right?
When WBC.
When you see the WBC and you see these Latin, you know, American countries, like, it's a party. You know, and it's not like, let's, you know, follow the respect and the rules of the game, the unwritten blah blah blah. It's like, dude, we're having a blast. Yeah, come along if you want to. If not, we're gonna go anyways.
I know we got a break here. If you asked me, and this is not just to fit the conversation, outside of my years obviously playing in college, if you said, what were your two best baseball experiences? Here's what they were. One was going to the Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm. All right. During the summer of my sophomore year in college, not with my college team, with a bunch of other players to play Dominican teams, right? To play there in front of thousands, I mean thousands of fans with cowbells and the Dominican flag and music during the game. Like, it was incredible. And the other, and this was my favorite team of all time, I was on a team called the Bronx Angels, right? Mm-hmm. And there were about 20 of us on the team, three white kids, I'm sorry. And they were all, myself, I was one of the three, obviously. The other two kids were from my high school, okay? Yep, yeah. I swear to God. Every other kid was either Latino or black, whether it's Sanders in right field, 6'3" black kid who played at Kennedy, played tight end, had a rocket. Danny Vasquez was our center fielder, got drafted.
Wait, hold on, that black kid, he chose football instead?
He was better at football.
Yeah, okay.
He was better at football.
Kenny,
he was. He honestly, he was. You know what he was? In baseball, he was very toolsy. Like, you looked at him, you're like, this guy, he's a piece of granite. He's got a great arm. He runs like the wind. But in terms of the at-bats, he wasn't making it. You know, and he didn't make it in football either, but he liked football more. Our shortstop, Kenny Iglesias, a Spanish kid who I played against in college too. And this was up in Spanish Harlem, right, where I would drive with my two buddies. And I'd get out of the car, play my game. The only outside of my parents and my friends' parents, the only white people there that were our parents, take the best time of my life.
I believe it.
The barbecues fired up for a doubleheader. The Dominican parental and just family influence, they're all there. They're all supporting their kids. Music, insane. And that energy, I think when you feel that energy, it certainly resonates with you, but it's something that you want to replicate. And for too long, we were trying to kind of, I'm not saying stifle that from fully permeating Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And now the gates are open,
yeah,
finally, and it's great. It's awesome, dude.
No, you're right. And it's
night to night, it just feels different.
It's what the Bryce Harpers of the world have been advocating for a while.
That's right. No doubt. No doubt. All right. Where's Ack? We haven't said hi to Ack. Ack, what's going on, buddy? How you doing today?
I'm all right. Yourself?
Good, buddy. Good. You all right?
I'm good. Red Sox winning streak is over.
Now, listen, I saw that. A little blue base hit at the end there,
yeah,
by Kepler, who I think was left center. So Ack is a product of the 70s. So, you know, this conversation, I know we got to get the update, but the conversation we had, Ack, when we were growing up, you know, you're a couple of years older than me. I'm 2 years older than Tiki, but we're from the same cloth, basically. You know, like, there were every night. I mean, Dave Parker, Dave Winfield. I mean, just black players everywhere.
Reggie.
Of course, the great Reggie Jackson. I mean, just go all across the board. Jim Rice could play this game, yep, all day. Like, it never once felt like there was a dearth of players, of black players, but it has felt like that for a while. But it feels like it's shifting back a little bit. Do you agree with that?
I would think so. I think, and I can't say with any certainty, but my gut feeling is I think whether it's baseball or youth programs are now starting to incorporate those kids again, and I think it's a very important thing. I mean, look, I can't. You mentioned just a couple of names, and Willie McCovey, Willie Stargell.
Oh, McCovey, stretch.
You know, when I was a kid, the African American baseball player, I idolized those guys. I wanted to be those guys, and you know, I was a white Jewish kid growing up in Brooklyn. So, you know, I mean, they were everything. Bob Gibson's another, Lou Brock. Yeah. I mean, you could just go on and on about them, and suddenly that stopped, and I'm not sure why, but I always thought it was very important, whether it was Major League Baseball or anybody else, to get those kids involved again.
Good stuff, Ack. Let's get the update. We'll come back, hit you with the Blast Ax update right now. All right, good stuff, Tiki and Tierney. A lot of great topics. If you missed anything, Odyssey.com, the app, check it out. And just type in our names, scroll around, bounce around, do a little hunting. Hunting for pins, they'll be doing that this weekend. The PGA Tour returns to CBS. Many of the world's top golfers descend on the famous Harbortown Golf Course, Lynx Course. It's in Hilton Head, South Carolina. It's the RBC Heritage. Live coverage 3 Eastern, noon Pacific, Saturday and Sunday on CBS. You know, and while I say that, obviously today's Thursday. I know Dustin Johnson's playing out there. We get a quick peek at the leaderboard here. See if there's any carryover from the Masters. See if there's any big names. I know it's not a star-studded leaderboard, but it's usually a pretty good event. It's a unique course, too. Oh, they're killing it. Look at this. Cameron Smith -9. Look at Teak. Got a 62. Got a 63. This thing's got -24 written all over it.
Yeah.
Minimally.
This is not a contest.
No. After Masters, these guys are like, yo, I'm free. Time to get loose. Stuart Sink is up there. Well, it's Billy Horschel. Maybe he can keep his shoes on this week. Harold Varner, the third. Morikawa's up there. All right, Lucas Glover, a lot of names we know. Daniel Berger, American. Corey Connors was actually in the Masters until Sunday, kind of shot himself out of it.
Yeah, Zalatoris, you know, is sitting back, tied 15th at 3-under.
Oh, nice. I didn't even see it. Nice. Yeah, there's Zalatoris. Let's see his score. I know it's -3, but we got a 7 on the second hole, and he still shot a -3. Good recovery for the young man. All right, a little Blast. Are you ready to roll, Mr. Tiki?
I am. Let's do it.
Let's go, buddy.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for the Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, Tiki. So earlier this week, Pro Football Hall of Famer Charles Woodson joined our buddy Zach Gelb, the Zach Gelb Show, doing a good job here on CBS Sports Radio. And he gave his take on Aaron Rodgers' future with the Pack.
There's all this, you know, this talk swirling around him and Green Bay. You know, I think it could be one of those situations where it gets nasty at some point somehow in a back and forth between, you know, the Packers and Aaron's agents. And then, you know, before you know it, somehow the thing gets blown up. So, I mean, I certainly hope that doesn't happen. But, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire.
All right, good job by Gelb getting that out of him. How do we think the coming years play out for A-Rod?
Yeah, I think he's right.
Final answer.
I know, right? Or if he just quits and takes his 46 days and works for Jeopardy for the rest of his life. I think he's right about that. I think it is going to come to a head at some point. Now, I don't know if Aaron Rodgers is going to go off on the Packers, but I could certainly see his agents making this thing hell for Green Bay if it doesn't pan out the way Green Bay or Aaron Rodgers and his team wants it to be, for sure. Charles is probably right here. It just feels like there's a lot of writing on the wall that this isn't going to end pretty for Aaron Rodgers. And it's a shame, because it seems like that's what Green Bay does to their all-time great quarterbacks.
Well, let me push back a little bit. Favre was kind of doing it to them, holding them hostage every single year toward the end.
True. He deserved to, though.
Okay, I got you. I don't think it ends necessarily poorly for Rodgers, because, quite frankly, I don't think anything happens that Rodgers isn't somewhat okay with. I don't think he, maybe I'm wrong, I just don't think I'm going to see him ceremoniously dumped by a highway, cut. I think what's going to happen is they either resolve this and say, all right, we probably drafted a quarterback we didn't need to. He retires a year or two before, maybe not pull a Brady and try to play forever, which I don't think he's doing anyway, or just go right to Jeopardy. I don't know that it's going to be as acrimonious as maybe Charles Woodson thinks. I think it actually, maybe I'm wrong. I think it gets resolved a little safer than that. All right, right now, there's only 3.5 games separating the fourth-seeded Hawks, who have been balling since their new coach, McMillan, over Pierce, and the ninth-seeded Pacers in the East, with the Celtics 5, followed by the Knicks at number 6. Not even in the play-in game today. Love it. Hornets and Pacers. So what is our prediction for the final order of 4-9 in the East? I mean, this is asking me to do a lot of semantics here. You go through a lot of different possibilities. Here's what I think. All right, first of all, the Bulls, Zach LaVine is out for a little bit. So he COVID protocol, and I thought that would mesh a lot. They got him too late, Vucevic, who's terrific, but they got him too late, and they're not playing. I thought they played better, to be fair. I guess I may have been off on that in my short-term assessment for the Bulls. So I think the Heat will find a way to rally. I think the Heat will finish above the Knicks. I think the Knicks will finish above the Hornets. They're losing games now without Ball. They are not the same team. Pacers are always a tough fight. I'd say that the Hornets drop down to about 9, then the Pacers probably 8. I'm going to say the Knicks are about 7, and then Celtics and Heat somewhere in that order.
I have no idea, so I'm going to say...
I don't even know what I said, but
I'm going to say Celtics, Hawks, Heat, Knicks, Hornets, Pacers, and then Bulls.
Okay, so...
The same.
So we're on the same page with the Hornets. They're slipping.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, after losing Jamal Murray, we'll see if Denver slides. Need of scoring. Obviously, putting up 20 points a game was Mr. Murray before he ripped up his knee. And are looking to sign Austin Rivers. Now, he was let go by my Knicks earlier this year. Over the course of his A-plus years, remember Duke, former star, has averaged 24 minutes, 9 points a game, played for his pops as well. Did we have higher expectations for his career after the one and done for Coach K?
I'm not sure that I did. I mean, I was actually surprised when he won and done it at Duke, because remember back then you didn't get that a ton. Kyrie obviously did it, but I didn't feel like he was superstar stepping into the NBA and was just going to beast it. Not that staying another year or two would have developed his game anymore, so to speak. I didn't have higher expectations. I think he's playing exactly where I thought he would be in the NBA.
Here's what has really surprised me. First of all, he's still in his 20s. He's 27, 28 years of age, and he's played for the Clippers. He's played for New Orleans. Mm-hmm. He's played for the Rockets. He was with the Wizards for a minute. He was with the Knicks literally for a second, and now he's going to be on another team. That's what surprised me. 6 teams?
Yeah.
And you're still 27 years old, and your dad played in the NBA and was a respected guy? Like, Doc Rivers was not a great player, really good player, but a really respected team guy, leader for sure, smart dude. I'm not saying that Austin's not smart. I'm not implying that at all, but I thought that there would have been more stability to his career. Not that he would have been a superstar putting up 23-9. I thought he would have been marginally better and definitely had more of a home. That surprises me. All right, how about this? Cincinnati named former UNC Greensboro coach Wes Miller their next head coach. Remember, some people thought that UNC might do that. Remember we talked about that? After firing John Brandon recently, Cincinnati did that. One of the more notable Cincinnati alums, Kenyon Martin Sr., Kmart not happy, posted a cryptic tweet after the coaching news was announced saying, quote, "Yeah, you're all right. Here we go again. How'd the last situation work out for you? I'll wait." End tweet, quote. What are our thoughts on former program legends ripping hiring decisions? I don't love it blindly. Now, it's one thing if somebody gets a chance, okay, and they fail and they're over their heads and they're losing recruiting battles and they're losing games and there's issues off the court. That's different. Myself, I would show a little bit more respect initially to my alma mater, myself.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go, just because you never know. Gilbert Arenas did the same thing about Tommy Lloyd, who we just talked about at Arizona, basically saying, I don't even say his name. This is a quote, because he doesn't deserve it. You're an assistant coach, okay? You assist. Come on, Gilbert. That's a little harsh.
That's a little rough right there.
So, I mean, I don't love it when it's malicious like that. So, yeah, I agree with you, BT.
Okay.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
Santa was also asking us. We ran out of time. You know, Rendon's lefty last night for the White Sox, the near-perfect game that we talked about, the sick play by Abreu at first base. Awesome stuff. But what
Rodon.
What did I say?
Yeah, you said Rendon. He wrote Rendon.
Oh, my bad.
That's wrong.
He almost had it. And then, you know, obviously still got the no-hitter. Great play by the third baseman. Abreu with the play at first. What's the equivalent of losing a perfecto or a no-no in the ninth in other sports? There is no – let me save everybody's time. There is no equivalent.
Mm-mm.
Because there's nothing you can do in basketball.
There's nothing individual like that.
Nothing individual. Yeah. Nothing. The only, I mean, if you want to really stretch it and say a guy's flirting with a sub 60, a 59 or a 58 in golf, and he gets a triple on 18, maybe.
Or perfect game in bowling, maybe. And you come up with a nine.
I mean, come on, dude. I
agree with you. It doesn't even come close, dude.
Uh-huh. You know what's funny, though? As much as I'm laughing at what you just said, bowling popped into my head, and I was going to even incorporate it.
But it's not
it
mainstream enough.
No, you know exactly. I hear you. There's nothing, because the buildup over 2 hours plus, obviously, it's every pitch is palpable. There's so few perfect games. Nothing.
Yep. And then they hit a dude's foot.
And his foot on a slider, which was nasty.
0-2 slider, too, by the way.
I know. Teak, have a great night. Great show, brother. I'll catch you tomorrow.
You too, bro. Be good.
Yep. Everybody enjoy your Thursday. Safe, sensible, sane. Peace.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.